Breathing apps. Breathing apps represent a versatile and increasingly sophisticated toolset for delivering respiratory training outside the clinical environment. These applications, available on smartphones, tablets, and computers, offer a range of functionalities that guide users through paced breathing exercises, track practice frequency, and visualize progress over time. The primary value of breathing apps lies in their accessibility and ease of use. Clients can engage in biofeedback-informed training from anywhere, whether at home, work, or in transit, without requiring expensive or bulky equipment. This makes breathing apps especially useful for clients who need to reinforce therapeutic gains between sessions, are managing chronic conditions such as asthma or anxiety, or require flexible training environments due to lifestyle demands. The primary function of most breathing apps is to provide audiovisual pacing cues that indicate when to inhale, exhale, and pause. These cues are typically presented as moving shapes, e.g., expanding and contracting circles, oscillating waveforms, or synchronized soundscapes. These elements help structure breathing cycles, providing external scaffolding that supports internal rhythm. Many apps allow users to set the breathing rate, often between 4 and 7 breaths per minute, and adjust the inhale-to-exhale ratio, enabling therapists to tailor pacing parameters to the client's resonance frequency or specific clinical needs. Clients who struggle with timing or concentration benefit from the predictability and consistency these apps offer. Popular breathing apps include Coherence Coach and Easy Air Plus for computer use, both of which are designed for HRV biofeedback applications. On mobile platforms, apps such as Breathe Plus, the Breathing App, and Heart Rate Plus Coherence often feature intuitive interfaces and adjustable pacing settings. Some integrate real-time biofeedback via smartphone sensors or wearable devices, allowing users to monitor heart rate variability or breathing rate while practicing. This creates a hybrid experience that combines structured pacing with physiological tracking. While these consumer-level sensors do not always meet clinical-grade standards, they provide sufficient feedback to reinforce engagement and habit formation. Many of these apps also include features like session reminders, streak tracking, and progress reports that enhance adherence and accountability. Breathing apps vary widely in their design, functionality, and evidence base, and clinicians should evaluate them before recommending specific platforms. The app should allow for adjustable pacing intervals, including the ability to lengthen exhalations and include pauses between breaths, which are crucial for parasympathetic activation and end-tidal CO2 normalization. The user interface should be free of unnecessary visual clutter and allow for smooth, continuous pacing without abrupt transitions. Ideally, the app includes clear onboarding instructions, a calming visual theme, and the option to mute or modify auditory cues based on user preference. Compatibility with both Apple and Android devices is important to ensure accessibility across client populations. Clinical orientation is essential for effective use. Clients must understand the purpose of breath pacing, how to synchronize their breathing with the app, and how to evaluate whether the pace is appropriate. If the app is too fast, it can induce overbreathing and increase anxiety. If it is too slow, clients may experience air hunger or revert to effortful breathing patterns. Clinicians should guide clients through a practice session during appointments, monitor for signs of dysregulation, and adjust pacing targets based on physiological and subjective feedback. For example, a client with chronic hyperventilation may begin at 6 breaths per minute and gradually work down to 5 over several weeks. Breathing apps can also be integrated into broader wellness routines. Clients may be encouraged to use the app before sleep, upon waking, or during transitions such as returning from work or preparing for social interaction. When paired with mindfulness meditation, progressive muscle relaxation, or imagery, breath pacing enhances the overall coherence and effectiveness of these interventions. Additionally, some clients report using their breathing app during moments of acute stress or panic, using the familiar pacing signal to reorient themselves physiologically and cognitively. This portability and immediacy make breathing apps a uniquely empowering resource in a self-regulation toolkit. In conclusion, breathing apps are an effective adjunct to in-office training, offering structured pacing, ease of access, and motivational features that support long-term practice. They extend the reach of clinical care promote client autonomy, and help embed healthy breathing into the fabric of daily life. When selected thoughtfully and used consistently, these tools play a vital role in translating breath work from a therapeutic exercise into a sustainable habit of self-regulation. Encourage practice with breathing pacers. Encouraging consistent practice with breathing pacers is an essential strategy for promoting mastery of paced respiration and the internalization of healthy breathing rhythms. While breathing apps provide convenience and versatility, standalone breathing pacers, whether visual, auditory, or mechanical, offer a focused, distraction-free method for teaching respiratory pacing in both clinical and home settings. These tools produce rhythmic signals that guide the timing of inhalation, exhalation, and pauses, enabling clients to entrain their breath to an external metronome. Pacers are particularly effective during the early stages of training when clients are learning to override dysfunctional breathing patterns and require external scaffolding to support self-regulation. Breathing pacers can range from a simple clinician-generated verbal cue, for example, inhale, 2, 3, exhale, 2, 3, 4, to a sophisticated software program or device that displays a pulsing light or animated shape. Regardless of format, the critical feature is rhythmic consistency and a tempo that aligns with the client's physiological needs. Pacers are typically set to guide respiration at a rate between 4 and 7 breaths per minute. Clinicians may start clients at 6 breaths per minute and gradually adjust this rate based on comfort, performance, and resonance frequency assessment. Pacing signals should include both the inhalation and exhalation durations, with an emphasis on extending the exhalation to support parasympathetic activation and carbon dioxide preservation. The value of a pacer lies in its ability to offload cognitive effort during training. Rather than concentrating on counting or timing, clients can focus on sensing their bodily response, such as abdominal expansion, ease of breath, and rising warmth in the extremities. This embodied attention reinforces interoceptive awareness and facilitates the transition from effortful to automatic breathing. Pacers can be used during formal training sessions or integrated into daily routines. For example, a client might practice with a pacer during the first 5 minutes of a morning routine, after lunch, or before sleep. Regular, brief exposures are more effective than occasional, extended sessions, and help stabilize the respiratory rhythm across various contexts. As part of clinical homework, therapists can provide clients with downloadable breath pacing audio files, recommend web-based pacers, or create customized video cues. Tracks with built-in nature sounds or gentle tones are often preferred, as they enhance relaxation without introducing distracting stimulation. For individuals with auditory sensitivities, visual pacers such as expanding and contracting shapes may be more suitable. Regardless of modality, the pacing cues should be smooth and unambiguous. Abrupt changes in tempo or poorly calibrated transitions between inhale and exhale can create confusion and induce overbreathing or performance anxiety. Clients should be encouraged to use the pacer as a guide, not a strict command, allowing for minor deviations if needed to maintain comfort. Clinicians should monitor and adjust pacing protocols over time. As clients become more skilled, they may require less external structure and begin to self-pace with greater accuracy. At this stage, the use of pacers may shift from routine training to situational support, employed strategically during high-stress events, emotional upsets, or transitions. The fading of pacer use represents a successful transfer of pacing control from external to internal sources. However, even advanced clients may return to pacers during periods of illness, increased stress, or disrupted routines to recalibrate their breathing. This flexibility reinforces the view of breathing pacers as a lifelong tool for self-regulation. Therapists should normalize the need for pacing aids and frame them not as crutches, but as accelerators of learning. Just as metronomes help musicians establish timing and muscle memory, breathing pacers support the entrainment of physiological rhythm. For clients who struggle with unstructured mindfulness or breath-focused meditation, pacers offer a concrete and manageable entry point. Over time, clients gain confidence in their ability to modulate arousal, sharpen focus, and restore calm, skills that generalize across domains of functioning. Breathing becomes not just a technique, but a resource embedded in the body's natural rhythms and accessible at will. Healthy breathing tips. Teaching clients practical, evidence-based breathing tips supports the transfer of respiratory training into daily life and solidifies behavior change. These tips distill complex physiological principles into accessible habits that enhance respiratory efficiency, reduce sympathetic activation, and promote resilience. Many clients benefit from simple, actionable guidance they can apply outside of structured practice sessions, particularly when navigating stress, fatigue, or emotional distress. Healthy breathing tips should prioritize sustainability and adaptability, recognizing that even small adjustments in breathing behavior can produce meaningful psychophysiological benefits. Clinicians must frame these tips not as rigid rules, but as strategies that can be integrated into diverse lifestyles and situations. A foundational tip is to prioritize nasal breathing throughout the day, especially during rest and low-intensity activity. Nasal inhalation enhances air filtration, warms and humidifies the breath, and stimulates the production of nitric oxide, a gas that promotes vasodilation and facilitates oxygen uptake in the lungs. Clients who habitually mouth breathe often experience chronic overbreathing, dry airways, and reduced end-tidal carbon dioxide. Encouraging clients to notice whether their mouth is open or closed during routine tasks, such as walking, working, or reading, reinforces this habit. Individuals with nasal obstruction may benefit from saline rinses, positional adjustments, or referral to an ear, nose, and throat specialist for evaluation and management. Another tip is to use longer exhalations to downregulate the nervous system. Extending the duration of the exhale, either by breathing through pursed lips or mentally counting during exhalation, engages the parasympathetic branch of the autonomic nervous system. This technique is especially useful during moments of stress, before sleep, or following physical exertion. Clients may begin with a 4-to-6 ratio of inhale to exhale seconds and progress to ratios that feel natural and calming. These patterns can be introduced with or without a pacer, depending on the client's comfort level and skill. Clients should avoid breath holding unless instructed to practice post-exhalatory pauses for retraining the respiratory reflex. Clients should also learn to identify and reduce unnecessary breathing effort. Many individuals habitually overuse accessory muscles such as the sternocleidomastoid and trapezius during inhalation, especially when sitting at a desk or under psychological strain. Tips for reducing this tension include checking for shoulder elevation during breath cycles, allowing the abdomen to expand on inhalation, and using tactile feedback such as placing a hand or light object on the abdomen to cue diaphragmatic movement. Reducing clothing constriction and optimizing posture are also essential for minimizing breathing effort. These adjustments help clients breathe more freely, conserve energy, and reduce the risk of fatigue or pain associated with respiratory inefficiency. Developing breathing rituals can further support healthy habits. These may include brief breathing check-ins before starting work, practicing 5 minutes of paced breathing before sleep, or pairing breathing practice with daily activities like showering or walking. Associating breath regulation with established routines increases adherence and embeds the skill into long-term memory. Clients who develop consistent rituals often report greater emotional stability, improved cognitive focus, and reduced physiological reactivity to stressors. These rituals should be simple, brief, and intrinsically rewarding to sustain motivation and avoid framing the practice as a chore or medical task. Clients should also be encouraged to track their breathing over time, whether through written logs, app-based trackers, or subjective ratings. Noting when breathing feels easy, difficult, fast, or labored can help identify patterns and triggers. This reflective process builds interoceptive awareness and strengthens the connection between breathing behavior and emotional or contextual factors. Over time, clients become more responsive to internal cues, using their breath proactively to regulate mood, prevent panic, or support recovery from exertion. This tracking process can be reinforced in clinical sessions by reviewing trends and celebrating progress. Finally, clients should be reminded that perfection is not required. Breathing is naturally variable, influenced by posture, emotion, environment, and activity level. The goal is not to maintain a fixed pattern, but to cultivate flexibility, awareness, and the ability to return to balance. Missed sessions or periods of dysregulation are not failures, but opportunities to re-engage with the breath and apply the skills they have learned. Encouraging self-compassion and resilience in this process increases the likelihood that healthy breathing will become a stable, lifelong resource rather than a transient intervention. Paced Breathing Demonstration by Dr. Kazan. The paced breathing demonstration by Dr. Ina Kazan provides an essential clinical example of how guided breath work can influence autonomic regulation in real time. This demonstration, which contrasts normal and paced breathing, illustrates the physiological shifts that occur as clients transition from unregulated respiration to a structured, low-end slow breathing pattern. Dr. Kazan's instructional style emphasizes precision, comfort, and awareness, aligning with the principles of mindfulness-informed biofeedback. Through this model, clients and clinicians can observe how strategic breathing reduces physiological arousal, increases respiratory sinus arrhythmia, and normalizes end-tidal carbon dioxide, all of which contribute to a coherent psychophysiological state. Her clear pacing and verbal guidance make this demonstration accessible for diverse populations, including those unfamiliar with breathwork or hesitant about biofeedback interventions. In the demonstration, Dr. Kazan typically guides clients to breathe at approximately 6 breaths per minute, with a focus on effortless diaphragmatic movement and a slightly longer exhalation phase. Clients are instructed to inhale gently, typically for 4 to 5 seconds, and exhale slowly, taking 6 to 7 seconds. She reinforces the importance of smooth transitions, discouraging abrupt starts and stops between phases. The breath cycle is portrayed as continuous and fluid, rather than mechanical or segmented. Throughout the exercise, the goal is not to take large, forceful breaths, but to allow natural, comfortable respiration that meets the body's metabolic needs. This non-striving, accepting approach helps reduce the performance pressure that often accompanies self-regulation efforts, particularly in individuals who are anxious or self-critical. A core feature of the demonstration is the integration of physiological feedback. Using real-time biofeedback tools, such as a capnometer and heart rate variability display, Dr. Kazan shows how paced breathing alters measurable parameters. As the client settles into the breathing rhythm, end-tidal carbon dioxide typically rises toward the optimal range of 36 to 40 millimeters of mercury. Simultaneously, the heart rate variability waveform becomes more pronounced, with peak-to-trough differences that reflect increased parasympathetic activity. These changes occur within minutes and provide powerful visual reinforcement of the practice's efficacy. For clients, seeing these shifts validates the technique and enhances engagement. For clinicians, the demonstration provides a blueprint for structuring, pacing, and monitoring effective breath training sessions. The demonstration also highlights subtle cues that distinguish successful from unsuccessful attempts. Clients who breathe too deeply, forcefully, or rapidly often show erratic respiratory waveforms and declining end-tidal carbon dioxide. Dr. Kazan redirects such clients toward gentler, more mindful breathing, emphasizing sensation over control. Her calm tone and clear instructions serve to down-regulate arousal and foster trust in the process. In this way, the demonstration is not only a technical illustration but a relational model of therapeutic presence. It shows how attuned, non-judgmental guidance can create the conditions for physiological safety and behavioral change. Clinicians can use this demonstration as a training tool in several ways. They may show the video to clients during a session to introduce the concept of paced breathing, replicate the timing and phrasing used in their own guided exercises, or incorporate similar structure into group workshops or remote interventions. The simplicity and elegance of the model make it adaptable across clinical populations, including clients with anxiety, chronic pain, PTSD, asthma, and functional somatic syndromes. By standardizing the pacing rhythm and emphasizing diaphragmatic movement, clinicians ensure consistency and optimize training outcomes. Repetition of the exercise, combined with client reflection, helps solidify new respiratory habits. Perhaps most importantly, Dr. Kazan's demonstration communicates that breathing is a powerful, trainable lever for physiological regulation. It affirms that clients can influence their internal state in real time, using nothing more than their attention and breath. This empowerment message is crucial for individuals who feel overwhelmed by symptoms or disconnected from their body. As clients begin to experience the calming effects of paced respiration, they often describe increased confidence, improved mood, and greater resilience. The breath becomes not just a target of regulation, but a source of stability and strength. Monitor and discourage excessive breathing effort. Monitoring and discouraging excessive breathing effort is crucial in respiratory training, as overexertion during breathing can undermine the primary goals of biofeedback, reducing arousal, restoring autonomic balance, and improving respiratory efficiency. Clients often approach breathwork with the mistaken belief that more effort leads to better results. They may inhale deeply, tighten their abdominal and thoracic musculature, or force exhalations in an attempt to breathe correctly. This overengagement activates the sympathetic nervous system, increases muscle tension, reduces end-tidal carbon dioxide, and exacerbates symptoms such as lightheadedness, chest pressure, and anxiety. For this reason, clinicians must monitor for signs of excessive effort and intervene with corrective feedback that emphasizes ease, awareness, and minimal exertion. Excessive breathing effort can be detected through both visual observation and instrumentation. Clinicians should observe for overt signs such as visible shoulder elevation, clavicular movement, strained facial expression, and audible breathing. Clients who appear to be working hard during what should be a gentle exercise are likely engaging accessory muscles and disrupting respiratory chemistry. Surface electromyography, SEMG, is a valuable tool for confirming this suspicion. Placing SEMG sensors on the trapezius or scalenes allows clinicians to monitor the muscle activity that accompanies respiration. A rise in SEMG output during relaxed breathing practice indicates that the client is using these muscles unnecessarily, signaling a need to refocus on diaphragmatic control. Clients are often surprised to see how much muscular tension they apply to breathing and gain insight when these metrics are brought to their attention. Another important parameter is end-tidal carbon dioxide, which provides real-time feedback on respiratory chemistry. Clients who breathe with excessive force or volume often show declining CO2 values, even when breathing at the correct rate. This hypocapnia signals overbreathing and often precedes symptoms such as dizziness, numbness, or derealization. By slowing the breath, reducing volume, and prolonging the exhalation, clients can restore end-tidal carbon dioxide to the optimal range of 35 to 45 millimeters of mercury. Clinicians should emphasize that the goal is not to maximize breath size, but to minimize loss of carbon dioxide while maintaining comfort and fluidity. Clients can learn to breathe less, but better, which reinforces a physiological state of calm rather than arousal. Clients may also show a degradation in their respiratory waveform when applying too much effort. A healthy waveform is smooth, sinusoidal, and consistent. Excessive effort produces jagged, irregular, or shallow waveforms, reflecting poor respiratory control. Real-time visual feedback using a respirometer or respiratory inductance plethysmography can help clients see these patterns. When guided to reduce effort, many find that their breathing becomes quieter, more efficient, and more comfortable. Clinicians should model this shift by demonstrating gentle breathing and encouraging clients to follow cues such as let the breath come to you, breathe like you're sighing in relief, or move the breath with the belly, not the shoulders. Encouraging body awareness is also central to discouraging excessive effort. Clients who are disconnected from their somatic experience may be unaware of the tension they carry in the thorax, shoulders, or jaw. Mindful breathing exercises that involve scanning the body for tension, relaxing the face and shoulders, and observing the breath without judgment can support the shift to low-effort respiration. Clients may benefit from practicing in a supine position, where gravitational support reduces postural demands and facilitates diaphragmatic movement. In this position, placing one hand on the abdomen and another on the chest reinforces the goal of keeping the chest quiet and the abdomen active. Breathing in silence, with eyes closed, can further enhance interoceptive focus and reduce performance-related distractions. Clinicians should normalize the tendency to over-effort and frame it as a learning opportunity rather than a failure. Many clients have spent years breathing inefficiently and may associate effort with competence or success. By helping them experience the contrast between forced and effortless breathing, clinicians create powerful learning moments. Clients often describe a sense of relief, lightness, or a feeling of being grounded when they release unnecessary effort. These sensations reinforce continued practice and provide intrinsic motivation to refine their technique. As effort diminishes, breathing becomes more rhythmic, carbon dioxide stabilizes, and symptoms decrease, confirming the value of ease over exertion. In conclusion, excessive breathing effort is a common but correctable barrier to successful respiratory training. Through visual observation, instrumentation, modeling, and mindful awareness, clinicians can guide clients toward efficient, parasympathetically mediated breathing. When clients learn to let go of effort and trust their breath, they not only improve their physiology, but also gain access to a powerful tool for emotional and cognitive self-regulation. Physiological effects of healthy breathing. The physiological effects of healthy breathing are systemic and profound, influencing nearly every organ system through autonomic modulation, gas exchange efficiency, and improved circulatory dynamics. When breathing is slow, diaphragmatic, and in harmony with metabolic demand, it restores the respiratory reflex, optimizes blood gases, enhances vagal tone, and promotes physiological coherence. One of the most immediate effects of healthy breathing is the normalization of end-tidal carbon dioxide. When clients breathe at a slower rate with adequate tidal volume and longer exhalations, carbon dioxide levels typically rise into the optimal range of 36 to 40 millimeters of mercury. This stabilization enhances the Bohr effect, allowing oxygen to be more readily released from hemoglobin into tissues, thereby improving oxygen delivery to the brain, heart, and muscles. Nitric oxide production also increases during nasal breathing, further amplifying physiological benefits. This gas, produced in the nasal sinuses and upper airways, diffuses into the lungs and bloodstream, where it promotes vasodilation, the widening of blood vessels. Vasodilation, in turn, enhances peripheral circulation, allowing for the more efficient delivery of glucose and oxygen and facilitating thermal regulation. Clients frequently report sensations of warming in the hands and feet during coherent breathing sessions, reflecting the shift from sympathetic vasoconstriction to parasympathetic vasodilation. These thermal changes are not merely subjective. They reflect a fundamental rebalancing of autonomic tone and an increase in parasympathetically mediated blood flow to distal tissues. Respiratory sinus arrhythmia, RSA, a phenomenon in which heart rate naturally increases during inhalation and decreases during exhalation, becomes more pronounced during slow-paced breathing. This increased RSA reflects improved vagal tone, which is a key index of autonomic flexibility and emotional resilience. High vagal tone is associated with improved stress recovery, enhanced emotional regulation, and better cardiovascular health. Paced breathing enhances this dynamic by entraining the cardiovascular system to a stable rhythm, resulting in a coherent heart rate variability, HRV, waveform. Clients practicing resonance frequency breathing often exhibit HRV oscillations in the low frequency range, approximately 0.1 Hz, which correspond to optimal baroreflex sensitivity, a critical mechanism for blood pressure regulation and autonomic control. Healthy breathing also reduces activation of the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal, HPA, axis, thereby lowering circulating levels of stress hormones such as cortisol. This biochemical modulation supports immune function, reduces inflammation, and attenuates the chronic wear and tear on physiological systems known as allostatic load. Clients practicing breath work consistently often report improvements in digestion, sleep quality, and energy levels. These effects are mediated through the vagus nerve's influence on the gastrointestinal system and endocrine pathways. By restoring parasympathetic dominance, breathing promotes rest and digest, physiology that counters the hypervigilant state characteristic of chronic stress. In the brain, improved oxygen and glucose delivery, facilitated by both biochemical, Bohr effect, and vascular, vasodilation, mechanisms, supports cognitive clarity and executive function. This effect is particularly relevant for individuals with anxiety, ADHD, or trauma-related conditions, who often suffer from impaired prefrontal regulation. Functional neuroimaging studies have demonstrated that paced respiration can enhance activity in brain regions associated with interoceptive awareness and emotional regulation, including the insula and medial prefrontal cortex. Clients often subjectively describe enhanced mental focus, reduced distractibility, and greater capacity to observe emotions without becoming overwhelmed, cognitive outcomes that reinforce the utility of respiratory training across clinical presentations. Finally, healthy breathing facilitates the release of endogenous opioids and oxytocin, neurochemicals associated with pain relief, social bonding, and emotional comfort. This neurochemical cascade not only enhances the effective experience of breathwork, but also supports its use as a non-pharmacological intervention for pain management and trauma recovery. Clients engaged in slow, mindful breathing report increased feelings of safety, presence, and self-efficacy. The breath thus becomes not only a physiological regulator, but a psychological anchor, a resource that clients can use to modulate their state, regain composure, and reconnect with their body in the face of stress. In sum, the physiological effects of healthy breathing extend far beyond respiration. By restoring homeostasis across multiple systems, breathwork becomes a foundational intervention that supports cardiovascular regulation, cognitive function, emotional balance, and systemic health. It is not simply a stress management tool, but a systemic reset, a means of transforming how the body and brain interact with internal and external demands. Hyperventilation syndrome. Hyperventilation syndrome, HVS, is a complex and often misunderstood respiratory condition in which individuals breathe in excess of their metabolic needs, leading to persistent or episodic hypocapnia, abnormally low levels of arterial carbon dioxide. Contrary to outdated models that characterize hyperventilation merely as excessive breathing due to stress, modern conceptualizations recognize HVS as a multifactorial, behaviorally conditioned breathlessness syndrome. In many cases, overbreathing is not the cause but a consequence of altered breathing reflexes, emotional dysregulation, and dysfunctional interoceptive processing. Clients with HVS may not present with visibly rapid breathing, but can still maintain a chronic respiratory alkalosis that disrupts oxygen delivery and autonomic balance. These disruptions manifest as a constellation of symptoms, including dizziness, chest pain, shortness of breath, paresthesia, visual disturbances, cognitive impairment, and panic that frequently mimic serious cardiopulmonary pathology. Diagnostically, HVS poses challenges because its symptoms overlap significantly with anxiety disorders, panic attacks, asthma, and cardiac conditions. Moreover, traditional pulmonary function tests may appear normal, leading to underdiagnosis or misattribution to psychosomatic causes. The Nijmegen questionnaire is a validated self-report tool that screens for hyperventilation symptoms and helps clinicians identify clients who may benefit from respiratory retraining. A score above the established threshold suggests symptom patterns consistent with HVS, particularly when combined with low baseline end-tidal carbon dioxide levels, typically below 33 millimeters of mercury, as measured by capnometry. Importantly, clients with HVS may breathe at a rate that appears normal, for example, 10 to 14 breaths per minute, but demonstrate shallow, rapid exhalations and insufficient post-exhalatory pauses, resulting in cumulative carbon dioxide depletion. The pathophysiology of HVS involves not only respiratory chemistry, but also neuroplasticity. Chronic overbreathing desensitizes both central and peripheral chemoreceptors to carbon dioxide, thereby disrupting the feedback loop that regulates respiratory drive. As a result, clients initiate inhalation prematurely, suppressing natural fluctuations in carbon dioxide and reinforcing hypocapnic states. This altered reflex threshold creates a vicious cycle in which clients feel compelled to breathe more frequently or deeply. Interpreting the resulting somatic symptoms, such as tingling, dyspnea, and lightheadedness, as signals of suffocation, cardiac distress, or neurological dysfunction. These misinterpretations further elevate arousal and breathing frequency, perpetuating the disorder. In this way, HVS becomes a learned dysregulation of the breath with strong cognitive, emotional, and physiological components. Therapeutic approaches to HVS must be multimodal and include psychoeducation, paced breathing, and cognitive restructuring. Clients should be taught that their symptoms are not due to insufficient oxygen, but rather to excessive loss of carbon dioxide. This reattribution is critical for reducing health anxiety and fostering motivation for retraining. Biofeedback with capnometry is particularly effective in guiding clients toward achieving normalized end-tidal carbon dioxide levels. Training involves reducing the respiratory rate to between 4 and 7 breaths per minute, emphasizing longer exhalations, and reintroducing the post-exhalatory pause to restore the respiratory reflex. Clients should be encouraged to tolerate mild discomfort associated with rising CO2 levels, understanding that this is a sign of recalibration, not danger. It is also essential to monitor for co-occurring conditions. Many individuals with HVS meet criteria for panic disorder, agoraphobia, or generalized anxiety disorder, and addressing these diagnoses through cognitive behavioral therapy enhances outcomes. In some cases, HVS may mask or coexist with respiratory conditions such as asthma or chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, requiring careful medical evaluation before initiating breath retraining. Additionally, clinicians should screen for trauma histories, as unresolved trauma may contribute to hypervigilant interoception and defensive breathing patterns. For these clients, a trauma-informed approach that emphasizes safety, titration of exposure, and gradual desensitization to respiratory sensations is essential. Clinicians should discourage outdated and potentially dangerous interventions such as paper bag rebreathing, which can induce hypoxia in individuals with undiagnosed cardiopulmonary conditions. Instead, clients should be taught to re-establish carbon dioxide homeostasis through slow, diaphragmatic breathing supported by biofeedback, posture correction, and interoceptive awareness training. Over time, clients with HVS often experience significant reductions in symptom frequency and intensity, improved functional capacity, and greater confidence in their ability to manage somatic arousal. Breath becomes not a source of fear but a pathway to regulation, control, and restored physiological integrity. Symptom history. A thorough exploration of symptom history is essential for identifying hyperventilation syndrome, HVS, and differentiating it from other respiratory, cardiac, and psychological conditions. Clients with HVS often report a diverse and variable range of symptoms that may mimic acute medical emergencies, leading to repeated visits to emergency departments, unnecessary diagnostic procedures, and misdiagnosis. Acute presentations frequently include sensations of air hunger, chest tightness, rapid heartbeat, dizziness, visual disturbances, paresthesia, for example, tingling or numbness in the hands, feet, or face, and a sense of unreality or impending doom. These episodes may emerge spontaneously or in response to identifiable stressors, such as interpersonal conflict, exertion, or enclosed spaces. Clients may describe these episodes as panic attacks, but often lack insight into their respiratory contribution. Symptom onset in HVS is often sudden, with clients reporting that breathing just feels off, or like I can't get a full breath, despite normal oxygen saturation levels. In both acute and chronic presentations, these individuals often breathe rapidly and shallowly from the chest, even during periods of rest. Clients may be unaware of this breathing pattern, or they may consciously attempt to take big or deep breaths in response to their discomfort, inadvertently worsening hypocapnia and intensifying their symptoms. It is common for clients to describe frequent sighing, breath holding, or a sensation of not being able to exhale completely. Others may feel the need to yawn excessively or report that they are always out of breath, even in the absence of physical activity or measurable pulmonary impairment. Chronic manifestations of HVS are equally disabling and include fatigue, brain fog, irritability, digestive complaints, muscle cramps, and temperature dysregulation. These symptoms are often nonspecific and may be misattributed to depression, fibromyalgia, or autonomic disorders. Neurologic complaints such as headaches, difficulty concentrating, tinnitus, or sensations of pressure in the head or face are particularly distressing to clients and may lead to anxiety about serious illness, including stroke or seizure. This symptom constellation contributes to a vicious cycle of health anxiety, maladaptive breathing behaviors, and increasing physiological disruption. Clients with this pattern often experience high medical burden and low treatment satisfaction prior to engaging in biofeedback or breath retraining. The pattern of symptom fluctuation provides important diagnostic clues. Many clients with HVS report exacerbation of symptoms during stressful situations, transitions, or periods of inactivity, such as lying in bed or sitting in meetings. Conversely, symptoms may improve temporarily with distraction or mild physical activity that encourages deeper, more rhythmic breathing. However, if exercise provokes anxiety or breathlessness, it may reinforce maladaptive breathing responses. Clients often avoid activities or environments they associate with symptom onset, such as crowded spaces, elevators, or high-stimulation environments, thus displaying behaviors consistent with avoidance and safety-seeking commonly observed in anxiety disorders and agoraphobia. A detailed psychosocial history often reveals predisposing or perpetuating factors that contribute to the condition. Many clients with HVS have experienced prior episodes of trauma, chronic stress, or emotional suppression, and their breathing patterns reflect defensive responses such as bracing, breath holding, or upper chest activation. Clients may describe their breathing as guarded or report difficulty accessing their diaphragm, especially when asked to focus on bodily sensations. These patterns often emerge early in development and may be reinforced by family dynamics, cultural expectations, or medical events, for example, surgery, illness, or hospitalization, that make breathing feel unsafe or dysregulated. Recognition of these patterns is crucial for developing a treatment plan that is tailored to the client's physiological and psychological history. In assessment, it is crucial to correlate subjective symptom reports with objective physiological measures. Capnometry, respirometry, and surface electromyography provide essential data to confirm over-breathing patterns, evaluate end-tidal carbon dioxide, and identify excessive use of accessory respiratory muscles. When clients see that their distress correlates with physiological markers of dysregulated breathing, they are often more receptive to breath retraining and less likely to attribute symptoms solely to mysterious or catastrophic causes. This insight not only fosters buy-in, but also reduces fear and increases client agency, setting the stage for successful behavioral and psychophysiological intervention. Demographics. Understanding the demographics of hyperventilation syndrome, HVS, is essential for accurate identification, appropriate intervention, and tailoring treatment strategies to at-risk populations. HVS is more prevalent than generally appreciated, with studies indicating that up to 10% of patients seen in general internal medicine clinics may meet the criteria for a primary diagnosis of HVS. However, many more individuals present with symptoms attributable to over-breathing patterns without receiving formal recognition of the condition. It is estimated that as much as 6% of the general population in the United States may experience chronic or episodic symptoms associated with HVS. These statistics suggest that clinicians are likely to encounter HVS regularly in diverse settings, even if the condition is not labeled explicitly. There are notable age and gender trends in the epidemiology of HVS. The condition is most frequently observed in individuals between the ages of 15 and 55, a range that spans adolescence through middle adulthood. This age range coincides with periods of increased psychosocial stress, hormonal fluctuation, and major life transitions, factors that may contribute to heightened vulnerability to dysregulated breathing. The female-to-male ratio in HVS is estimated to be as high as 7-1, suggesting that women are disproportionately affected. The reasons for this gender disparity may be multifactorial, including socio-cultural pressures, higher baseline rates of anxiety disorders among women, and possible hormonal influences on respiratory chemosensitivity and autonomic tone. HVS is also significantly comorbid with psychiatric conditions, especially anxiety disorders. Approximately half of individuals diagnosed with panic disorder exhibit hyperventilation symptoms, and an estimated 60% of those with agoraphobia show evidence of respiratory dysregulation consistent with HVS. However, only about 25% of individuals with HVS meet full diagnostic criteria for panic disorder. This dissociation underscores the need to assess respiratory function independently rather than assuming that hyperventilation is simply a byproduct of panic or anxiety. In clinical practice, many clients who deny panic or emotional distress nonetheless present with chronic respiratory patterns that impair functioning and produce disabling somatic complaints. Therefore, demographic correlations should inform but not limit diagnostic inquiry. Occupational and lifestyle factors may also contribute to the risk of HVS. Individuals in high-stress professions, such as healthcare, education, law enforcement, and corporate management, are often observed to exhibit maladaptive breathing patterns. Sedentary occupations that involve prolonged sitting and forward head posture can restrict diaphragmatic movement and encourage shallow, thoracic breathing. Similarly, professions that demand high cognitive engagement or performance under pressure may promote breath holding or overbreathing as unconscious compensatory mechanisms. In these populations, respiratory training can have not only clinical but also performance-enhancing applications, restoring autonomic balance and cognitive clarity. Cultural, environmental, and educational factors may shape the expression and recognition of HVS. In societies where emotional expression is stigmatized or where somatic symptoms are more socially acceptable than psychological complaints, individuals may be more likely to express distress through respiratory symptoms. Misinterpretation of these symptoms by medical professionals can lead to over-medicalization and under-referral for psychophysiological interventions. Increasing awareness of the prevalence and presentation of HVS across populations is critical for reducing stigma, promoting accurate diagnosis, and directing clients toward effective, evidence-based treatment. Clinicians must remain vigilant across diverse demographic profiles and avoid making assumptions that limit accurate assessment. While HVS is more commonly diagnosed in women and younger adults, it also occurs in men, older individuals, and children. In adolescents, for example, breath holding and frequent sighing may be signs of developing respiratory dysregulation. In older adults, hyperventilation may be masked by comorbid medical conditions or attributed to the normal aging process. Therefore, comprehensive evaluation, including capnometry, symptom inventories, and observation of breathing patterns, should be integrated into psychophysiological assessments regardless of client demographics. Only through a nuanced understanding of who is affected can we effectively deploy interventions that restore respiratory homeostasis and improve quality of life. Don't rebreathe in a paper bag. Despite its historical popularity, the practice of rebreathing into a paper bag during acute hyperventilation episodes is now strongly discouraged due to its significant safety risks and lack of evidence-based efficacy. While the rationale behind the intervention was to increase arterial carbon dioxide levels by re-inhaling exhaled air, clinical findings and adverse event reports have revealed the dangers associated with this technique, particularly when the underlying cause of hyperventilation has not been medically evaluated. The seemingly benign act of breathing into a paper bag can become fatal if applied indiscriminately, especially in individuals with undiagnosed cardiovascular, pulmonary, or metabolic disorders. One of the most serious concerns associated with paper bag rebreathing is the risk of hypoxia, which occurs when there is insufficient oxygenation of the blood. This can occur when the individual rebreathes carbon dioxide-rich air without adequate oxygen content, leading to a rapid decline in blood oxygen saturation. In clients experiencing chest pain or palpitations, hyperventilation may be a symptom of myocardial infarction, heart attack, pulmonary embolism, or spontaneous pneumothorax. In such cases, restricting oxygen intake by paper bag rebreathing could exacerbate the underlying pathology and result in catastrophic outcomes, including cardiac arrest. Several case reports have documented deaths directly attributed to this intervention in individuals with these conditions, prompting warnings from emergency medicine and cardiology professionals. Moreover, the paper bag technique assumes that hyperventilation is the primary problem, rather than a compensatory response to another pathology. In conditions such as metabolic acidosis, sepsis, or congestive heart failure, the body may increase respiration to correct acid-base imbalance or enhance oxygen delivery. Interrupting this compensatory mechanism with rebreathing can impair gas exchange, worsen acidemia, and cause loss of consciousness. Without diagnostic clarity, rebreathing can mask symptoms that require immediate medical intervention. Therefore, any acute episode of dyspnea, chest discomfort, or altered mental status must be treated as a potential medical emergency until ruled out through appropriate evaluation. From a behavioral standpoint, the paper bag reinforces avoidance and fosters dependence on external objects for regulation, rather than teaching clients internal skills for restoring respiratory homeostasis. Biofeedback-based respiratory training offers a safer, more effective alternative by empowering individuals to modulate their breathing through awareness and pace control. Clients learn to increase carbon dioxide levels by reducing respiratory rate, softening exhalations, and restoring the post-exhalatory pause, all while maintaining adequate oxygen intake. These strategies are physiologically sound and applicable across a wide range of clinical conditions, including panic disorder, anxiety, asthma, and chronic hyperventilation syndrome. Additionally, the practice of paper bag rebreathing undermines clinical professionalism and may erode client trust when framed as a simplistic solution to complex physiological dysregulation. When clients fail to experience relief, or worse, experience deterioration, they may feel invalidated, dismissed, or fearful of future symptoms. In contrast, modern respiratory training involves precise measurement of end-tidal carbon dioxide, continuous monitoring of respiratory rate and effort, and individualized pacing protocols. These evidence-based methods not only improve physiological parameters, but also enhance client confidence, interoceptive awareness, and long-term symptom management. In conclusion, clinicians must actively deconstruct the myth of paper bag rebreathing and educate clients on its dangers and limitations. Breathing is a powerful lever for physiological change, but it must be guided by current scientific understanding and tailored to individual health status. By replacing outdated interventions with safe, evidence-informed practices, clinicians protect their clients, uphold ethical standards, and advance the field of psychophysiological care. Respiratory biofeedback. Respiratory biofeedback is a structured intervention that trains clients to modify their breathing patterns using real-time physiological data to restore homeostatic function and improve physical and psychological well-being. It employs instrumentation such as capnometers, respirometers, and respiratory inductance plethysmographs to monitor key variables, end-tidal carbon dioxide, respiratory rate, tidal volume, and breathing effort, while providing immediate feedback to the client. This feedback enables clients to identify maladaptive patterns, such as overbreathing, thoracic dominance, or irregular timing, and to replace them with coherent, diaphragmatic breathing. By making invisible physiological processes visible and trainable, respiratory biofeedback promotes interoceptive awareness and empowers clients to take control of a crucial component of autonomic regulation. A core feature of respiratory biofeedback is the measurement of end-tidal carbon dioxide, typically assessed through a nasal cannula attached to a capnometer. This measure reflects the partial pressure of carbon dioxide in exhaled air and serves as a non-invasive indicator of arterial carbon dioxide levels. Normal values range from 35 to 45 millimeters of mercury. When clients are instructed to breathe slowly, evenly, and diaphragmatically, end-tidal carbon dioxide levels generally rise toward the normative range, thereby improving cerebral perfusion, oxygen delivery, and acid-base balance. Capnometric feedback teaches clients that breathing less, at lower volumes and rates, can resolve symptoms previously attributed to oxygen deficiency, such as dizziness or breathlessness. This reframing often produces an immediate shift in confidence and motivation. The respirometer or respiratory effort belts track the rhythm, rate, and amplitude of respiration. These devices generate waveforms that reveal whether clients are breathing smoothly or erratically, using their diaphragm or engaging accessory muscles, and maintaining adequate pauses between breaths. Biofeedback enables the clinician to coach real-time corrections, such as encouraging clients to prolong exhalation, pause briefly before the next inhalation, or redirect movement from the chest to the abdomen. Clients quickly learn to associate physiological coherence with specific breathing patterns and can generalize these skills across contexts. When combined with resonance frequency breathing, typically at a rate of 4 to 7 breaths per minute, the training enhances heart rate variability and strengthens vagal tone. Electromyographic feedback from muscles such as the scalenes, sternocleidomastoids, or upper trapezius adds further value by identifying excessive muscular effort. Many clients unknowingly contract these muscles during inhalation, reinforcing thoracic breathing and sympathetic arousal. SEMG feedback shows how unnecessary tension increases during dysregulated breathing and decreases when clients switch to a diaphragmatic pattern. This integration of respiratory and muscular feedback allows for a comprehensive approach to breathing retraining, supporting both structural and chemical normalization of the respiratory system. Reducing muscular strain also alleviates associated symptoms like neck pain, headaches, and fatigue. Clinical implementation of respiratory biofeedback follows a stepwise protocol. The initial phase includes baseline assessment and education about the physiology of breathing. Clients then begin active training with guided sessions, where the clinician adjusts pacing rates and offers verbal, visual, or auditory cues to shape the breath. Homework includes daily breathing practice, often supported by apps or pacers that replicate in-session conditions. As clients gain proficiency, the intervention shifts from structured sessions to applied settings, utilizing breath control to regulate anxiety, alleviate pain, or improve concentration. In conditions like panic disorder, asthma, PTSD, and functional somatic syndromes, respiratory biofeedback often serves as a foundational skill that enhances the efficacy of cognitive behavioral therapy or mindfulness-based interventions. Respiratory biofeedback is particularly effective when paired with psychoeducation, cognitive reframing, and motivational interviewing. Clients must understand the rationale behind retraining and believe in their capacity to influence physiological processes. Therapists should emphasize the role of carbon dioxide as a regulatory gas, the relationship between breathing and autonomic tone, and the reversibility of learned dysregulation. Clients who understand that symptoms like dizziness or chest tightness stem from controllable respiratory patterns are more likely to engage in practice and persist through early discomfort. Over time, they report increased energy, emotional balance, and resilience in response to daily stressors. In summary, respiratory biofeedback is an empirically supported, non-invasive intervention that empowers clients to reclaim control over a vital physiological function. It bridges the gap between somatic symptoms and psychophysiological solutions, offering a structured path toward regulation and recovery. Whether applied to clinical disorders or performance enhancement, its capacity to recalibrate the breath and, through it, the entire autonomic nervous system, makes it a cornerstone of integrated healthcare.